your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. For the rest of the weekend edition, we are going to switch our focus a bit more to the resource sector, starting off with Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. Now, Joe, it's been a while since we had you back on the show. And look, we've talked week after week about just how rough these resource markets are in a number of sectors for a lot of the companies. The companies continue to sell off while a lot of the metals prices are holding up relatively well. We want to talk to you a bit more about what majors are looking for. So some of the major miners looking at any development stage companies or even some of the junior explorers, tying that in somewhat with M&A, because quite frankly, the whole mergers and acquisitions within the resource sector have been largely focused within the majors. Majors combining with other majors, not going down the food chain that much, or even when they have gone down the food chain, the acquisitions just have not been that exciting. They haven't come at huge premiums. Really, the last major winner seemed to be Great Bear. Unfortunately, that almost marked the top of the last run for the stocks. Joe, how do you see this environment right now with majors potentially looking to start acquiring companies? Do you think that could pick up anytime soon?
Well, I guess it, thanks for the invite, but I would say it depends on the sector. Like we have seen M&A, I think you were referring to in the gold sector, where we had, B2 Gold acquiring Sabina. And I think that was encouraging to see a single asset developer being acquired. And I think the idea there was that B2 Gold saw an opportunity of an undervalued single asset developer who had the permit, who had done a lot of work on the project. You know, they found the numbers to be reasonable. And they had a comparative advantage, they thought, because they have worked in the Arctic before. So they bring that experience with them. They're not learning how to operate in the Arctic. The project's still not easy with respect to where it's located, but that's encouraging to see that kind of M&A. Most of the M&A, especially in the precious metal sector, as you said, have been more for production, whether it's Newmont and Newcrest, in terms of trying to compete against the global equity ETFs. But still offer a dividend. That's probably what's driving that acquisition. But also Newmont ends up getting a lot more copper exposure, Australian dollar exposure, and importantly, a new mining technique that they, not a new mining technique, but a mining technique that's been being applied more to certain deposits with less environmental footprint, like block caving that Newcrest is really good at. And Newmont probably less so, and potentially that can apply to some of their assets. So we're seeing a lot more of that in the gold sector, but potentially from Barrick's point of view, that they're interested in M&A, but they're almost looking more at in the copper space. So the last sort of swipe they made was for First Quantum, a copper company with assets in Africa and other sort of geopolitically risky places like Panama. So yeah, the gold sector, you know, depending on the company, is branching out into different things. What would be encouraging from a gold investor perspective is to see more M&A of the single asset developers. But we are seeing, equity private placements, especially Newcrest is very, very active in that. So that's encouraging. But I think right now companies or investors are looking for companies with access to capital in this kind of environment that can maintain their share structure and still generate catalysts. That is different in the critical mineral sector, especially for lithium, where I was just recently at a conference where the valuations are much more, let's say, frothy.
Well, Joe, just maybe sticking with the precious metal side first, and then we could dive into lithium and even the base metal side of it. In the gold space, we have seen a lot of the big boys taking over big boys, as Corey mentioned, when you think of the Newcrests and the Newmonts, but also Yamana getting carved up by Agnico, Eagle, and Pan American. And we have seen some other single asset companies like Sabina taken over, like Gold Standard Ventures, but they were at not great prices for those companies. Same kind of thing with Alexco, where Hecla took over Alexco and then made a move on Attack Resources next door in the Yukon. kind of moving into assets that were stranded. And so a lot of investors that are sitting in these companies waiting for the takeover and seeing them get taken over near their lows don't come away feeling really rosy about the sector. It's not the same kind of experience as a great bear takeover. And when we talk to development companies, Joe, there's a couple dozen that have 1 million, 2 million, 3 million ounces whose strategy is to wait to get taken over. The problem is a lot of the big majors will move on those when they're distressed. So how do retail investors win in that kind of environment?
Well, it's difficult. The thing is that you need that option in your management team that they could build it themselves, that they not only have the technical capacity to build it, but they also have the access to capital to put it into production. So that's why you'll probably see a lot more private equity work in trying to take some of these assets private if the market gets worse and hold them for longer and build them under a private company that has no exposure to the public market and to that near-term volatility. So that would probably be a good mark of a bottom to see that. But I know that, you know, so a lot of these juniors are thinking like that, that, you know, as opposed to selling at a, 15 to 20% premium to my 52-week low, why don't I, cut my G&A, don't do anything, and just sit here for a year or two, wait for the market to rebound, because there's no point in, giving up right now. But some of these guys think, well, yeah, I'll give up right now, switch, and then go into another sector which has more access to capital, like lithium or something like that. So, to each his own on that part. What I find in the Canadian sector, more management teams are aligned with expiration and don't convert or transition, let's say, to development and production as easily as your Australian listed companies, who tend to have more of a technical capacity to take things into production than the Canadian juniors that want to get taken over early. So I think those sort of companies might have a better way of trying to ride this out and then come into the other side of this in production, which might garner a better premium once the market turns and maybe there's more M&A, because the M&A will probably start with these things that are already single asset producers in production rather than waiting for a permit and yet to be tested.
So, Joe, everyone points back to that 2011 time frame, give or take a year or two, when there was more M&A and the majors were taking over assets. And unfortunately, they had to write a lot of those down or completely off of their books. However, they do still own some of these assets, and with everybody. And as you said, the model in Canada, Vancouver especially, is be an exploration company, try to make those big discoveries, and then someone will buy you out. Is that a broken model right now simply because these majors, look, it's not like we need to produce double or triple the amount of gold in the world. Plus, these majors, they do have these other assets that seem like they made money a decade plus ago. So why would they rush down into these explorers?
Yeah, I think, not only explorers, but the development project, because all the M&A gives you a bigger portfolio of assets. And then what, the merger allows you to do is maybe potentially more efficiently allocate your capital. So, with the Newcrest-Newmont merger, Newmont has decided to defer the Yanacocha Sulfides project again, suggesting that they might have other opportunities to invest that capital in some of the assets that they're acquiring from Newcrest. And also, given the instability of the political environment in Peru. But you're absolutely right, is what people don't consider is the expansion capacity of some of these bigger mines to keep going. But if they want growth, then a lot of these companies' pipelines are bare. They don't have a lot of projects. They don't do a lot of exploration. And so there is that necessity to not only find projects, but find quality projects that might replace something already in their portfolio. And so that's, hopefully what they're thinking is that, even though the market is not great, mostly for equity. If I'm still generating cash flow right now and I'm looking for a development play or, you know, something like that, this is the time to make a move because they're trading at very low valuations and it could be accretive to me. You know, especially if the assets are in a jurisdiction that they're already working, they're close to an active plant. You know, those sort of M&A would be probably the first thing you would see. Greenfield projects in a country that people haven't worked in before, maybe a bit riskier right now, given all the incidents we've had. You know, we had a war in Sudan. We had another war in Ethiopia, the Tigray region, geopolitical crisis in Peru, changes in tax policy and potential nationalization of lithium in Chile, new mining reforms in Mexico with nationalization of lithium being proposed there as well. There's a lot of things happening in countries that have a significant, that produce a lot of metal. And so that's another thing that, suitors have to think about in the precious metal sector. Where can they work? And we also got to realize with all that consolidation, there's less suitors out there to actually do the acquiring.
Well, and that brings up another topic, Joe, that maybe people put so much focus on the majors as to their buyout candidate that they're ignoring the big swath of mid-tier producers in the middle that could bolt on some of these operations, maybe in a more efficient way than some of the majors who have their hands full. But we are seeing another trend, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Joe, and that is just the majors taking strategic stakes. They've been doing this for a long time, but it seems like that trend is growing. Just recently, I can think of a number of them, like Newcrest getting involved with both Metallic Minerals and Headwater Gold, Anglo Gold Ashanti getting involved with Inflection Resources, B2 Gold getting involved as a stakeholder in Snowline. We just saw Glencore take a stake in Stillwater Critical Minerals. So we're seeing these big boys taking stakes in companies, which is a 9.9% or a 19.9% stake typically. But it doesn't always mean that they're going to take that company over. So what's your take on that trend in the market?
Well, again, it depends on the suitor. So if it's like a Glencore or somebody like that, they might be interested in, you know, just buying a whole bunch of lottery tickets in the market to get offtake. They don't know who's actually going to be developed and they don't know who's actually going to be in production. But, you know, if I do enough of these, I might pick one that actually does and I get an offtake agreement out of that, you know, and it's similar to what Sandstorm used to do when they did equity stakes to get a first right of refusal on a royalty. You know, they don't want to take out the company. They just want access to a royalty. These other ones, access to offtake. The more important ones for us are the ones that potentially could be a takeout, you know, by taking a stake in the company. They not only say, hey, you know, I might be a potential acquirer, but they're also sort of approving what the company's doing, approving, you know, the asset quality and that. But some of these can be very asymmetric, you know, like with ATAC when they had Agnico own, I think, 9.9% of them. That didn't have a big impact on their valuation because Agnico, you know, didn't do a lot of Carlin-style deposits. They don't understand the metallurgy as well as some other countries, companies, but they do understand, you know, working in remote regions. Whereas when Barrick came in, you know, talking about this, you know, regional target, which was ATAC in terms of Carlin, that did a lot more for ATAC. But what did a lot more on the negative side is when Barrick pulled out, which suggested to the market, oh, you know what, if Barrick, who knows a lot about Carlins, don't like this, then this must really not work. So we got to look at that as well as when they come in, you know, it's a nice bonus, but when they leave, if they do go, it's a big negative as well.
Are there any area plays, Joe, that you think are garnering a bit more attention that could see some more money or some more majors showing interest in when it comes to, let's say, precious metals, gold and silver?
Yeah, with all the geopolitical risks that we're seeing in Peru and Chile, you know, if you're there, you're there. But, you know, for people new to come into some of these countries, it'll be more difficult because they have to raise market in the public forum. And it might be more difficult to do, especially in Mexico right now for a grassroots explorer that has no ground. Impossible, I would say. So that pushes people to jurisdictions like more people probably going to Nevada, to Idaho, Oregon, to to British Columbia, back into Ontario and to Quebec. So we might see a lot more of that. And, you know, once you're back in Canada, the access to capital is perennial with flow through and charity flow through. You know, your ability to access capital, especially now for critical minerals, is pretty good. Even though maybe the retail sector is not interested, there's still a lot of people that are interested in the tax incentive.
Joe, another thing you had mentioned in the mergers and M&A, that some of the gold companies are actually picking up more copper exposure. We saw a big trend a couple of years ago of silver companies wanting more gold exposure. And we do seem to see more large gold companies wanting more copper exposure. Does that tell you anything about kind of the sentiment in the precious metals, or is it just a move to diversify the cycles as these are longer life mines?
Yeah, I would say it was probably more so related to, you know, you can only grow so much in a certain sector. So the silver companies, you know, there's less silver deposits out there. So then they start talking about silver equivalency. And, you know, a lot of it's base metal, some of it's gold. And then in terms to keep the precious metal multiple, whatever that happens to be, which is a discount right now, you know, the only way to get it is to stay in gold. And that's where the growth was. I mean, that wasn't a great foray for somebody like First Majestic when they went into Jerritt Canyon in Nevada. Doesn't always work out. But the same sort of thing from a big gold company's perspective, that it's harder to make an accretive gold acquisition that actually has an impact on your bottom line, as deposits, the big deposits, there's fewer and fewer. And so, you know, you can only acquire more companies. But then after you make that acquisition, the bottom line is that you need even more of an asset to come in to make a dent on your bottom line. And so you move to copper, which the deposits are even bigger. So, you know, that's sort of like what Barrick's thinking about right now. They like copper in terms of the fundamentals, but also they see the growth and the ability to have a bigger impact on their bottom line with a big porphyry copper deposit.
Joe, do you think broadly that the gold and silver sector are in a little bit more trouble than maybe some of the gold bugs want to admit, from the aspect that we are seeing some of the majors shift a little bit of focus away from the precious metals? The stocks, or at least looking at the ETFs, when they have made a run higher along with gold, they've actually topped out at lower levels over the past about 14 years now. And quite frankly, there are just other options for investors that the underlying gold stocks just have a tougher ability to find investors, especially new investors.
Well, you know, even though gold is, you know, it's not that low and it's held up pretty well. And we see, I mean, and because not of ETF inflows, but more so because of central bank purchases, that's holding up the gold price, which is still a positive. You know what? So we don't see investor interest in the actual commodity because the U.S. Federal Reserve, you know, is continues to commit to more rate hikes, which are very visible but exist. So when real rates go up, gold price tends to get hit. But granted, it's not getting hit as much, but the equities, which are levered to that commodity, take a bigger hit. And that's what we're seeing. But problematically for the juniors and the developers, their access to capital from the retail side is much more difficult because they're not cash flowing. And that's really the problem part. Like, I believe up to the end of May, there were only $10 million worth of IPOs on the TSX Venture this year. You know, that goes for everything, oil and gas, you know, anything. But it sort of goes to show, you know, people's interest or lack of interest in high-risk capital ventures right now.
Yeah, unfortunately. Just been a tough environment, right? And we hear a lot of complaining from investors, also from CEOs, just saying it's a tougher environment out there. There just isn't the interest in the financing options, as we all know, have dried up. Now, obviously, that can all change, and it does change very quickly. But you just look at the charts, longer-term basis, and the metals prices look pretty good. But just the ETFs that follow the stocks, they have continued to struggle. Even the majors, they're not even close to all-time highs, as gold is trading at all-time highs. So I know it's just been a tough environment there, but again, there's been other commodity sectors like critical minerals that have gotten a lot more attention. Maybe some of that money will rotate into some of the other sectors, or maybe, quite frankly, we just need to keep following where the money is going. Joe, it's great having you on the show. I want to bring you on much more regularly because we could keep talking for probably another hour, but I'm going to get you out of here. I do very much appreciate your time and your insights. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and hey, we'll have you back on the show here soon.
Great. Thank you very much, guys.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.